Hi, and welcome to, well, Hodinkee Radio, but different. My name is James Stacey, and as many of you are already aware, my good friend and longtime colleague, Stephen Pulverant, host of Hodinkee Radio since its inception, recently moved on to new opportunities, and, you know, that has left something of a void for the Hodinkee Radio feed, not to mention for many of our hearts. I'm a senior writer at Hodinkee, along with being a photographer and a podcaster, and I've been tasked with filling that void, but in sort of a new and evolving format. I am not Steven, and I won't be trying to fill his talented shoes. Instead, we're going to try a few new things, some of which we hope will work, and from the onset, this new show will function as a weekly look at the biggest stories and watches, and I'm going to be joined by a panel of Hodinkee's best personalities. From editors to C-suite leadership and, of course, crucial behind-the-scenes operators, the next several episodes will bring you inside Hodinkee, with in-depth chats about our biggest stories, conversations from all over the world of watches, and all the arguments, hot takes, tangents, and enthusiasm that you can expect from a revolving group of the Hodinkee team. And so, without further ado, and in an attempt to make you all feel at home, hit me with that tune. Today we've got Character Watch Week and the arguments it has created, a fresh perspective on the AP Black Panther, and just way too much Space Jam. To go over all of this with me, please welcome my panel of esteemed co-workers, starting with Hodinkee's deputy editor, Nora Taylor. Nora, how you doing?
Feeling fresh, James. How are you?
Yeah, also fresh, I hope. Plenty of coffee. I've got another one in front of me. Let's try and keep the pace of my heartbeat, you know, matched with the audio scope of this show. We'll see how that goes. Next up, we have our very own EIC. If I were a good employee, he'd be my illustrious boss, the ever wonderful Jack Forster. How are you, Jack?
I'm pretty outstanding. Thank you, James.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. And finally, don't threaten him with a good time. It's Hodinkee's own Space Jam correspondent, Danny Milton. What's going on, Danny?
I'm doing well. Not sure how I feel about that nickname, but just want to say for everyone here, a character watch does not need to have moving hands. Good morning.
Oh, man. Okay, so we're coming in quick. For those of you who really don't know what's going on here, the last week or so at Hodinkee has been Character Watch Week. It is not in any way the home of my watch enthusiasm, so I've learned a lot about watches that have hands that move that are characters' hands and watches that have normal watch hands but also have drawings of characters on them and everything in between. I think it's going to come down to a pretty entertaining discussion, but we kicked the week off with one of our point-counterpoint series where we have editors kind of duel it out with a pair of stories between Jack and Danny. So Danny came in right on the intro there with his position. Danny, why don't you elaborate and explain kind of where you and your foe, Jack, kind of land on this topic?
Sure. I mean, at a top level, what we were doing was arguing what makes a character watch a character watch. And I say arguing, you know, we weren't fighting per se. I'd say it was a friendly debate.
Academic.
Academic debate that did definitely spill into the inner office Slack channel, which a lot of the audience doesn't get to see. Where it got a little bit more heated at times, where I still came out on top. Uh-huh. My side of the point counterpoint was that a character watch does not need to have the character with his arms as the hands telling the time. And Jack...
Right, so the classic like Mickey Mouse one where the two hands are spinning all the
exactly.
way around.
Exactly, and Jack okay. took the position that that is the only character watch that there is. And there can be no other. There can be only one.
Okay. Yeah, I'm here for this argument because for me the stakes have never been lower. So I'm just for the good times. Jack, why do they need the hands to be moving? Why is this core to character watch iconography?
First of all, James, can I just say I think that you speak for the vast majority of our readers when you say the stakes have never been lower. I think that's something that pretty much everyone who's listening can relate to that. You know, it's you take. Absolute doctrinaire positions for the purpose of point counterpoints.
Oh, absolutely.
And I mean, I'm not quite as rigid on the subject as I think, as I necessarily was in the article, but I do think that it's true that the most satisfying character watches are by far those with animated, you know, character arms or some sort of animation on the dial. And the reason for that has to do with the with what character watches most often depict, which is generally cartoon characters or characters from the comic books. And so the correspondence between the movement of the arms of a character on a watch and the and an animated character, I think, is one of the things that really makes a character watch sit up and sing. It's of course we also call watches that have mere unmoving, static, flat, lifeless images of characters on the dial. We call those character watches as well. But if you know, you look back at history, the character watch era really took off with Mickey Mouse, which was the first animated character watch back in 1933. Little Orphan Annie watches, which had a static image of Annie on the dial, came out a couple of years before that. The Buster Brown Pocket Watch of 1908 arguably doesn't count because that was really a shoe advertisement rather than a sort of a promotion of the character per se. But I just think it makes for a more interesting experience, and it gives you a more direct connection to the pseudo life of the character itself, a kind of Tamagotchi, if you will.
Okay. One could argue, Jack, that every Mickey Mouse watch is an advertisement for Disney.
One could.
And I would argue that every Mickey Mouse watch is an advertisement for Disney. But I digress.
Well, the difference between Mickey advertising Mickey and Buster Brown advertising shoes.
I was kind of curious to wonder what character watches are out there that aren't in some way advertisements.
Yeah, I mean, well, if you look at the dial of the Buster Brown pocket watch, it actually says Buster Brown shoes.
That's true.
It's a little bit more direct as like a mascot. And I guess Disney's product is Mickey, not shoes. So fair point. I'm not super sure what or who Buster Brown is. But I think that's probably besides the point to a certain extent. My question here would be, are we arguing really if one or the other format is exclusive to being a character watch, or simply that one is more pure than the other?
I think we were arguing the former, but about 1 minute ago, Jack added that the one with the moving hands is now the most satisfying version of a character watch. So we might now have come to a more cordial place in this argument, which... I think
center field for the field watch spectrum.
Which is good for everybody.
Can you hear the faint rustling noise of goalposts moving, Danny? Can you hear it?
So how would you guys each characterize the response to your specific position? Jack, how about you let us know first? What do you think of, like, were people on your side on your story, or were they saying Danny had it, or the other way around?
I mean, my sort of completely unscientific read was that I sort of marginally edged out Danny, and, you know, just in terms of our demographic, which tends to hew a little bit sort of more inflexibly doctrinaire and purist.
And Danny, how was the response to your assertion that a character watch is a watch with a character on it, essentially?
You know, I think that depending on which comment section you're reading, you're going to get some very definitive answers. I remember reading a comment somewhere that said that I was clearly right, and anybody who thinks otherwise is entirely wrong. I forget if that's exactly how the comment went, but I bet you Jack had 15 of those in his. Mm-hmm. So it really just depends. The truth is somewhere in the middle, you know?
Well, the internet is the best place for all arguments.
There were two articles, right? There's a void in between them both. So there's something exists in between those two posts that we'll never get to see the comment section for.
Well, I mean, Danny, I know what you and I think. I'm kind of curious what Nora thinks, who, you know, watched the whole thing unfold.
Yeah, me too. Nora, you got a tiebreaker in you?
Well, just as an editor, I'd like to say that nothing brings me more pleasure than sowing internal discord between two of our writers. Just kind of the crux of my editorial mission. I think the point in the middle might be James's, which is just the stakes have never been lower.
Hey, if you're going to make an internet argument, at least make it about something that literally doesn't matter. It's perfect. There's a lot of arguments about important things right now. We don't need to touch that fire.
No, I guess this is kind of a non-answer, but the answer is somewhere in the middle. I think the way that we looked at it is that character watchers are here to delight and connect people to the characters that they like. So the answer is probably whichever way you find the watch to be most delightful. If the hands move, that's for you. And then if it doesn't, you just want someone's face printed on the dial, then that is the correct one for you too.
Well, I think that's an incredibly middle ground answer of you.
Nothing is not political.
let me add a new wrinkle. I was thinking about character watches this week, and I think there's a certain type of character watch that maybe we didn't talk about.
Ooh.
And this is the character watch that people, it's a watch that people buy because they want to be more like a character,
whether
it's Steve McQueen's whatever, or I'm wearing a Doxa because, you know, kind of a Cousteau vibe. It doesn't have a picture of somebody on it, and the hands just do what normal watch hands do while also looking like normal watch hands. But like, there's people out there who don't know that much about watches or care about watches in any specific way, but own a Speedmaster because it's tied to the moon thing or to their favorite astronaut. At what level are almost all watches character watches?
I remember when this conversation came up and I was convinced that's what the point counterpoint was going to be. And I was fully prepared to take the position that all watches are character watches. As someone who's wearing...
Yeah. There's a little bit of cosplaying built into like every big watch that we all like love and know about, whether it's a sub or a this or like, and any of the big icons all have this back dialogue where you're like, well, yeah, but cave scientists wore this one. I'm like a cave scientist.
I'm wearing an explorer right now.
Yeah, there you go.
And it's the same idea. I mean, like, I'm not climbing Everest, but someone allegedly, you know, I'm not going to get into this argument right now, but there's a myth out there surrounding Mount Everest and the Rolex Explorer.
Stop, topic for another show. We can only have so many arguments.
I know. I don't want to get into it. Stay out of my DMs, Smiths fans.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely LARPing a little bit. If you have a Speedmaster and you put it on and you think to yourself, yeah, I could time a reentry burn with this.
Yeah, or like you go almost to space in your own rocket. I agree. I agree, Jack. Totally. So,
can I ask Jack one question though? Because this is something I was curious about, and I wasn't sure if he didn't want to talk about it until the stories were published. But where do we stand on the newest Silver Snoopy? And Snoopy on the back of the watch in a rocket moving. Technically, it's a hand. It is the chronograph. I think it's the chronograph seconds hand that is traveling around the dark side of the moon. Does that count for you as a character watch, Jack? Because it wasn't clear to me.
I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, Snoopy's unquestionably a character. It counts as a character watch in the broader definition, just on the basis of him being on the dial, never mind the animation. I always think an animation adds something, you know, extra special. And you know, I love seeing Snoopy inside the command module, you know, circling in front of the stars on the back. Yeah, I would say 100. That's certainly a character watch for sure.
Okay.
I mean, you know, it doesn't have to be the hands necessarily. I mean, there are character watches where the animation is, you know, a hand waving, and the waving hand is stuck on the pivot of the lever, which is just a terrible idea from a, you know, timekeeping standpoint. But I don't think anybody buys those watches because they expect chronometer time.
Yeah, who doesn't want unsprung weight on that part of the watch, right?
So all cuckoo clocks are character watches is where we're going to end up with this conversation.
I mean, yeah, arguably. Those wall clocks with Betty Boop or Felix the Cat with the eyes.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Right. I mean, those are character time pieces, yeah.
Oh, I want that on a watch.
Absolutely.
That's sick.
This is maybe an excellent time to bring up what was one of my favorite comments, which is like, this has strong is a hot dog a sandwich vibes.
Absolutely. I was literally just about to get there with that comment. I'm so glad you pulled that up. You want the hot dog as a sandwich, or like is cereal cold soup, or the other way around. If you want that question, the one that comes to my mind is like, if you allow the Snoopy, which Snoopy is a character, capital C character, that's one thing. But if we stretch the my previous question about are all watches character watches in some ways, what if it's one of the like Apollo edition Speedies where you get the insignia or maybe a moon or a Mars or whatever as one of the subdials? That feels like a bit of a character watch move as well, right?
I mean, you know, here's the thing. If we continue, we can continue to broaden the definition of character watch. You know, hypothetically, we have. You know, I mean, to the extent that you, if we say, okay, a character watch is also a watch that makes you identify with a person or celestial object or other inanimate object or animate entity, then that covers an awful lot of watches, and the use of the term character watch sort of starts to lose its meaning. If everything is a character watch, then nothing's a character watch.
All right. So if we roll that back a little bit, what about one of those like Air Kings with a Domino's logo on it?
Is Domino's?
I think it's not a character.
Yeah.
It's a pizza.
It is. I mean, functionally, that's what they're known for.
No Domino's slander on this pod.
It was brought up in the comments. Someone did ask if the Domino's did count. They also asked if watches like the Batman or watches that have been unofficially monikered count. I would definitely definitively say those do not.
Yeah.
No, I'm just poking fun at the idea of character watches and why we like them. I think at least the core, which is kind of both sides of this point counterpoint, those are the easy ones to understand as character watches. I was just pushing some buttons with the Apollo Speedies and stuff like that. And yeah, so I think we've probably beaten this cartoon horse to within an inch of its life. So we can probably move on to the next on the list, which is a really divisive watch, one that's had a big cultural impact this year. And Nora wrote a story that went up on Friday. If you haven't read it, maybe even pause the show. As much as I want to keep you here, and it's important that you stay and hit that like button, which doesn't exist for podcasts, maybe pause the show and check out this piece, which is Nora's look at the Black Panther, the AP Black Panther, which is, you know, we have now kind of the mind trust for this watch here on this call. So I want to dig into the Black Panther a bit, because there's so much about this watch that I don't understand. And I feel like I got closer to it when I read your piece, Nora, and obviously Danny's original coverage was excellent. I'm not a Marvel head. I don't watch the movies. I didn't grow up like reading comic books other than Hagar the Horrible and stuff like that. Calvin and Hobbes. And in my mind, I don't know if AP made a Calvin and Hobbes if I would give it like more leeway than I gave Black Panther. So Nora, why don't you give us the sort of the core of the argument for your story, which I thought was an interesting perspective.
Yeah, I could have written myself in circles about this watch. There's just so much to say and so much to think about. But the thing that I sort of landed on is that this piece has kind of gone out into the world and functioned more as a piece of contemporary art than a watch, in that people are confounded and reacting strongly to it in a broader way than I think, you know, the Hodinkee commenters react strongly to anything that comes out, but in kind of a broader way than most watches that are released. It has spurred all types of cultural conversation. It pulls in all of these webs of comic book fans, collectors, Marvel fans, art fans. And it is, I think, Danny, maybe you have the same opinion, that it is just an incredibly beautiful watch. And Jack, you saw it too. It's a beautiful watch in person, like absolutely gorgeous.
I would agree. I mean, I've mentioned this on the show before, but I was able to see it before there was any conjecture or any, it hadn't been released. So I had nothing to sort of sway my immediate opinion of it. And I actually didn't even know what I was going to see when I saw it. So I was summoned to AP headquarters in New York City, where I was escorted into a back room and given a box that I was told to open, and I would find out whatever was inside the box. And inside was this, and I opened it and I was pretty shocked immediately, but also because it was a real test of being able to have your own opinions that are unfettered without any interference from the outside world. And so I looked at it, and I the watch itself, I've said this a few times, it's a 42 millimeter AP Royal Oak concept, which on its own, it's a smaller version of what the watch has been in the past few years, would have been a great release. It's a great size. It's a very cool watch design. And then when you look at it, there's this pretty remarkable sculpture, miniature sculpture in there, which is so detailed. I mean, when we took the photos and I zoomed in afterward, it was pretty astounding. I mean, I definitely don't hate this watch by any stretch of the imagination.
And no offense to your wrist or mine or Davies, who it is shot on, it looks much better, I think, on its own than on wrist. Like, it belongs on a podium in someone's gorgeous hallway, well lit, backlit, presented as kind
of this. Ouch, yeah, junk wrist. Yeah. Goodness.
Shots fired, Nora. My goodness.
I included my own subpar wrist in there too. We're all in the same boat.
So I'm curious, Nora, why do you think this is a watch that people are still talking about, to the extent that we're still looking at writing more about it? Because a lot of times a watch comes out that's kind of like, it rubs people the wrong way, or just doesn't really find the audience that is also Hodinkee's audience.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in this case, I think that's what this watch did. It paints with a much broader brush than your normal high interest enthusiast AP special project.
Yeah.
You know, like an RD2 a couple years before. But what is it about this watch that makes it worth continuing to notice?
I mean, the watch doesn't exist as just a watch or as a piece of art. It draws in a lot of kind of layers of what we talk about culturally, in that it blends, I think, luxury in the fact that it is a wildly expensive AP watch, and like quote unquote low culture. Marvel is accessible to everybody. Marvel fandom is out in the world. You know, people, even like bringing in Marvel into a conversation about film, you're going to have people talk about it forever. And then you draw in the fact that like, they say that it was designed and planned before even the movie came out, the Black Panther movie came out, before Chadwick Boseman sadly passed. But there is sort of this undercurrent of a play for, especially when it was released April, that's, you know, there's an undercurrent of a play for, I guess, kind of a diversity grab that is, I think, very real. Because one thing I brought in the piece is that I look at things that are capitalizing off of or associating themselves with Black culture, and you have to wonder who is making money off of this and who is involved in the making of it. And AP can't give me those statistics. I was like, hey, how many Black people were in the room? And they were like, we'd love to tell you that, but that's illegal, which, like, fine. But it pulls in so much more culturally than your standard FP Jorn or whatever. And you know, if this had Spider-Man on it too, we wouldn't be having this conversation. Right. Like, we would still be having a conversation about it because it would be blending luxury and pop culture in a way which people would think, you know, is tasteful or not. But it is pulling on so many strings and touching on so many cultural touch points. Also, when you look at who AP had at that event, who the watch has been seen on, it is so much more than just a watch, either intentionally or not. And I think that it's good to have the conversation out in the open. And Danny, you talked about it too, where it was just sort of like, is this putting, you know, a somewhat radical comic book hero on the face of a incredibly expensive watch that only 150 people can buy, somewhat counterintuitive? Like, yeah, it is. But I do think it's bringing sort of this undercurrent. Like, anytime you post a story about Jay-Z wearing a watch, people are like, oh, it's a rich guy buying a watch. It's bringing all of these undertones that we see a lot of in conversation sort of to the forefront.
Could I push back slightly on one point, which I think is interesting, is how do you feel? I know this isn't really pushing back. How do you feel about the idea that Omega makes James Bond watches every time there's a movie released? They're not anywhere near as overt as an AP Black Panther watch that appeals to a certain consumer that a certain customer would never relate to as like a hero. Obviously, like, he's notoriously, you know, not a person of color. And the AP Black Panther, when we see it on the LeBrons, the different, like the Draymond Greens and such, is that, and I don't know what the answer is. Like, is that good or bad for combining like high luxury with what you were saying is sort of low culture that's a little more accessible than the luxury item?
I guess I'm not seeing the connection between the James Bond and the Draymond Green wearing. Like,
I'm saying like a Draymond, like James Bond might not appeal to Draymond Green, whereas like a character like the Black Panther, a hero, might more appeal to Draymond Green. Like, you might not see Draymond wearing a James Bond watch, for example. Mm-hmm. I guess is what I was getting at.
Yeah. I think that's great. I think this is yet another long, long discussion. I think that representation is not enough, obviously.
Yeah.
It's all about equity and parity. But when their offerings are so limited, you know, when it is characters associated with a character, if we're looking at a character watch as a watch associated with a character, and you want a Black character, your options are limited. And so you got to start somewhere, which is never a good answer. And I think, like, when you pull out and you're like, yeah, it's 2021 and this is the first one, like, that's not progress, but it is progress. So yeah, I think there are multiple ways to come at this where it's just sort of like, what are the other offerings? What are the other cultural touch points that we can have that allow you to have your version of an Omega James Bond, you know?
Totally. My question would be a little bit more zoomed out, but also I think probably harder maybe to answer. At least I can't think of a clean answer. So I'm curious to hear from all of you. Do you think AP did a good job with this watch?
Jack, bifurcated helicopter penis aside.
That made it to Nora's Slack too? You heard about this?
You know, I think they did a fantastic job with it qualitatively. It's the sculpture of the Black Panther is really, really beautifully done. It's got incredible depth. It's really alive. I mean, it does look like it's jumping right at it, you know, jumping out at you, you know, right out of the dial. I mean, yeah, the placement of the hands, the placement of the tourbillons is a little, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's a little risque if you want to look at it that way, but I think ultimately it works pretty well compositionally. That's a classic Black Panther you know, sort of physical position for both the comics and from the promotional stuff for the, you know, for the Black Panther movie. So it's legit from that point. And, you know, I mean, Francois Benamius is like, this is not a new thing for him. You know, this sort of like obsession with popular culture and comic book characters. You know, I mean, this has been something he's been hung up on for, you know, as long as I've known him. He's like absolutely obsessed with like comic book culture,
yeah,
with the Avengers,
sure.
With popular culture in general. And it's, you know, that's the big lever that he pulled to, or one of the big levers that he pulled to turn AP into the powerhouse, economic powerhouse it is today. And, you know, I mean, comic books, it's really interesting. Like the combination of low and high culture is, it's kind of a staple of style nowadays, and it has been for an awfully long time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, comic books were, I mean, that was pretty low culture back in the day. You know, I mean, you look at the history of comic books in the United States, there were moral panics about comic books, you know, at several points. You know, people say, oh, that's destroying the minds of our children. You know, it's like right up there with, you know, Esquire magazine ought to be banned. And they're like, this stuff all looks like, you know, really mild today. But I mean, you know, there was a time when, you know, the fact that, you know, kids in their early teens were such fanatical fans of comic books, that was a source of genuine concern for parents and congressmen.
I also say, like, what with any watch, a lot of times I see it on the wrists of other people, and what you don't see are the details on the dial, but you do see the case and the bracelet or the strap from afar, and you think, oh, that looks really good on that person, and I like that, and then eventually you get to see it from afar. This watch looks very good. I mean, I have to just say, like, when I see it on the wrists of the very few who have gotten a chance to wear it, it looks great. I mean, the purple strap, the finishing on the lugs and the sides of the case that track with the patterns that are worked into the open worked style dial, it looks really nice. So from an actual like watch perspective, if you like the Black Panther on the dial, the actual like case finishing, case design, and the implementation of the color of the strap, I think look really great.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, I've looked at thousands probably of character watches over the course of preparing for Character Watch Week. This is by far the most nicely done character watch I've ever seen. And like, I mean, I love the Gerald Gentas, but this is like, you know, just in terms of quality of execution, it's really next level.
And Nora, where do you land? Do you think they did a good job with it?
Yeah, I think it's beautiful. I hadn't considered looking like what it looks like from far away. And that's a very good point, Danny, that like from far away, you could just be like, wow, that's a very nice AP.
Yeah.
I think it'll be really interesting to see what the next iteration of the Marvel watch will be. It'll really help us, I think, look at this watch too, where it's like, if they somehow make a really beautiful, who's the guy with the bow and arrow?
Hawkeye.
Hawkeye. Yeah. If they make like a really beautiful Hawkeye watch, I think that'll also be really fascinating. It's just, this is kind of going away from your point. It is a really well done watch, and how much of it is that the Black Panther is such an engaging and kind of cool character to spin up into a watch. I think it'll be interesting to see what they do going forward.
Yeah. And there's the charity angle, and we're going to start seeing them start to hit auction and get sort of a real world value for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I also think at some level AP is, they're risk takers. It's in their blood at this point. They take big gambles. And I think, man, they made 150 of these.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And so on 150, like, they had the impact of a much more prolific watch. And to Danny's point, it establishes where the concept case size is going to move moving forward.
Right.
So I just suggest that this is the start of probably a pretty interesting era for the concept watch from AP. And yeah, I mean, they certainly got the attention quotient from a watch launch that any brand would be quite, you know, envious of.
Now, you know, so before we leave the subject completely, because we've talked about it quite a lot, I think one thing I would like to see them experiment with a little bit more are alternative methods of displaying the time that don't necessarily work against the depiction of the character. I mean, you know, I think this is a beautiful watch. I think it's really beautifully done. But, you know, imagine, say, a Hawkeye watch where the hour is a jumping hours window, and where the minutes are you know, like Hawkeye's holding a bow and it's drawn, and the tip of the arrow is a retrograde minutes hand. You know, something like that I think would be super interesting. It would be an animated character, which, you know, I dig. And I think that it would also, you know, sort of incorporate the time telling aspect of the watch a little bit better with the character. That's the only thing that I think was a little bit of a miss with the Black Panther watch.
Mm-hmm. I would love to see a character watch in the Marvel Universe with a power reserve indicator, and it's the Incredible Hulk, and at zero it's Bruce Banner, and at full power it's the Incredible Hulk. There's an idea, Watch World.
There you go.
They're great ideas, for sure. You know, I'm tempted to say that this is a peak character watch so for 2021, but I don't want to leave out a franchise that's I know very important to Danny.
Oh God.
Let's talk Space Jam. A new legacy of watches, and also I think there's a new Space Jam movie.
There is, was, however you want to say it.
A film, yeah. Sorry. A film.
Let's go movie.
All right, Danny, how did you end up writing about four different Space Jam watches over the course of 6 weeks or whatever it's been? And, you know, why? What were you thinking?
I have many discussions with my wife where I ask myself that very question.
Okay, can I just say, I just want to jump in here and say, like, everybody in the comments, you know, and I think people seem to have some idea that, like, me or somebody, you know, like Nora or Nick or somebody, like, held a gun to Danny's head.
Put the screws to Danny?
Yeah, and said...
Otherwise he gets the clamps.
And said, listen, Danny, times are tough out there. For content creators, you have it pretty cushy. So you're gonna do all of our Space Jam watch coverage, or else. And like that's not how Danny ended up writing for Space Jam watch.
It's a slippery slope, though.
It's not. But the funniest one was that this launch was I post a Space Jam story at the end of day Wednesday. Thursday morning, John Buse comes up with a Philippe Dufour auction piece. If you want the high low of watches, like in your face, it's that. Honestly, the first article that I wrote, I thought was going to be the only Space Jam watch. And it seemed like an interesting enough piece. I had been writing the Watching Movies column for 5 months at that point. And this was a movie, and there were watches, and the watches were kind of funky and colorful and interesting. And we don't do a ton of coverage that's geared toward kids. And I think there's a fair amount of readers out there that have kids, and there are certain levels of watches where you can get into the hobby. And I think that a lot of us own Fossil watches at some point in our lives. And I found there to be legitimate merit to a story about Fossil watches and Space Jam watches. And it made sense to me.
Just a quick question. When did the first Space Jam movie come out? What year?
1996.
Okay. So it's 2021. I mean, you know, people who, you know, watched Space Jam and loved it, you know, when it first came out, those people are
parents.
You know, this is a big nostalgia trip for them. Yeah, they're parents now.
And even if they're not parents, they might want to buy these anyway, because I've looked at eBay and there were Space Jam watches from the 90s, and they're you wouldn't want to buy them today. So maybe these offered some kind of a value play to them, and they're interesting. And then the dam broke.
You don't say.
And it just we kept getting these emails of releases, and it wasn't like a fashion watch release. It wasn't like X fashion brand had slapped a Looney Tune on the dial. There was something to each consecutive piece. The one that came to my attention next was a $100,000 Space Jam Tourbillon, which I don't have to say anything else about that. I mean, other than the fact that we want to talk about strange character-esque watches, this had a literal basketball-shaped tourbillon cage. And there's no way I wasn't going to write about that. I mean, that's one of those situations where if the film is about to come out, I've already written about one of them, and this could not be farther on the other end of the spectrum. I mean, they've got me at that point. So then a couple weeks went by.
You're at home just enjoying some peace and quiet.
I had
looking
just...
over an expanse of green grass and mountains, a cup of warm coffee in your hand, and then the phone rings.
Literally just returned from vacation, and this is basically what happened. There's a third one. I think someone just like messaged me. There's a third one. And I think I messaged Nora and Lori, our managing editor, and I said, I know that no one in their right mind would let me publish this under normal circumstances, but I'm just going to do this. So just like we're doing this.
You know, this watch has been like, you know, chasing you and surprising you unpleasantly and unexpectedly, the way Hannibal Lecter chased Will Graham in the novels.
Yes.
Like you think you're in Florida, you think you're fine, and all of a sudden, bam.
For goodness sakes, yeah. This is the third one. The third one, July 17th, 2021, the year of somebody who knows at this point, just because, dear God, there's a third Space Jam watch.
Nora, you might remember, I don't remember what the conversation was, but it was like we had a little debate about whether or not we were even going to write about this if we had reached peak Space Jam after two of
and then
them.
And then you got like what a 5 week reprieve.
Oh, we were babes in the woods. We didn't even know.
Well, it wasn't. So I wrote that, and I had written somewhere in there that if there's another one, drop an anvil on my head. I mean, that's how I felt at that point. Like, let's stop. And I got an email, I don't remember who sent it to me, with a link to a fourth one. And I think they had confused five-letter A words and said, I think you need some Advil. And then a link to the fourth one. Which, by the way, I've tried to communicate this a few times. If any of these watches had been released in like reverse order, where the fourth one was the first one or the third one was the first one, I don't know what my opinions would have been of them, because it's really hard to look at them in a vacuum. But this latest one that I wrote about looks like a Patek Philippe Nautilus, like straight up.
Yeah.
And on the strap that it's on, kind of looks like a Vacheron Overseas, which I've since learned this brand D1 Milano, I think that's kind of their thing. And it's also like very much something that many watch brands do. I mean, if, you know, just mimic the best and hope for the best. There have been some positive feedback on this watch. I mean, some people who have literally kind of talked themselves into maybe buying it in the comments section, which is I never expected. And maybe it's because the angle that I start these stories in is one of such complete exasperation and exhaustion. But I can't really say. It's not for me to say.
Hey, Danny, you know what I'm looking at right now?
Space Jam watches?
I'm looking at a vintage Lola Bunny Space Jam watch from the 1990s.
Oh, is it from Armatron?
Yep.
Yeah.
We need it for the book that Danny's going to start writing shortly.
Why do I know that? Why did I know that? See, that's the problem.
Yeah, that's sad. That hurts a little bit. I wanted to, you know, look at the D1 Milano. My favorite part, it's hard to say what my favorite part is because it's derivative in many ways, but the ultra thin, and then I don't want to scream into my microphone, but like Space Jam. It's just like, why say ultra thin and then also scream Space Jam at me? It is a good time though. Nori, you were going to say?
I was going to say, Danny, what would be your ideal venue for your eventual Space Jam watch collector meetup?
I mean, it's got to be space, right?
Yeah.
Jack's right.
When I was a kid, I don't know if anyone else had these in their malls, in their hometown. There was a Warner Brothers store in my mall. It doesn't exist anymore. And in the Warner Brothers store, there were massive, like full-size busts of DC characters punching through the wall. And then in the back for kids, there was a Marvin the Martian spaceship that you could go inside of.
That's pretty cool.
That store closed in like 1990, whatever. But I would like someone to build a Warner Brothers store, and we will have the meetup inside of Marvin the Martian's ship. Full-grown adults in a child-sized Marvin the Martian ship in a fake store. That's the venue.
My follow-up question is, of the four, which one do you like the most?
All right. Fantastic.
Which one have you ordered and you're just not telling me?
To be honest, it's the image changing fossil dial. That one is the most I'm a kid. Like, and that's what this should be in my mind.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a kid and I want a Space Jam watch. I want the one where the image changes. Like, I pulled it out of a cereal box. I've got all the characters because they can't fit on one version of the dial. You have to make the image change so you can get them all in there. Perfect. And it comes with three straps.
Hey, Danny.
Hey, Jack.
What's like Space Jam about? Is it like basketball in space or something? Or like, what's the deal there?
It is. You know what's great, Jack? This new movie does not take place in space.
No space.
No space.
No space, baby.
Zero space.
No.
Also, no, this is too much. I'm not even going to go into this. Forget about it.
This is
just algae rhythm that you have to be an absolute connoisseur or... of all things Warner Brothers to even like be able to conceive this movie at a low level. I mean, it is a bizarre, you want to talk about advertisements. I mean, the whole movie is just an advertisement for Warner Brothers IP. Anyway, I digress.
I believe we have.
Wait, James, have you seen the movie?
No, I have not.
Oh.
I listened to another podcast that I love quite a bit, JRVP. And one of the hosts on that is obsessed with the character Algae Rhythm. So I've been walked through a lot of it. Anyways, I think that's probably enough Space Jam for me. Danny, you okay to move on?
I am good.
All right.
James.
If you have any more Space Jam questions for Danny, write spacejam@hodinkee.com.
Can I just call out before we move on that Danny deployed the phrase "just slapped a Looney Tune character on the dial" in defense of my position in point counterpoint?
Hey, I mean, if it sells a watch, right?
Right.
Okay, so I wanted to get to maybe a couple of the stories that didn't happen for Character Watch Week. You know, it's not surprisingly, there isn't a ton of, say, scholarly writing about character watches. There's some, but there's not a ton when you're going back over the history. Nora, talk to me about Happy Meal and cereal watches.
This was just a story that I think, Danny, you were initially going to write.
And you graciously took from me. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and then I fumbled the bag since someone at McDonald's did not get back to me about all of the various Happy Meal McDonald's watches.
There's got to be hundreds, right?
Hundreds of them.
Thousands.
And then I was actually on my favorite store, onlinegoodwill.com.
Okay.
And there was a Burger King watch that came in a burger box. Like, there were some really well put together, incredibly cheap looking fast food watches, I think, in the golden age of fast food Happy Meals.
For sure.
And one very cool, I almost bought a Kellogg's watch that had like that cornflakes rooster on it. But there just wasn't enough.
You must have a name, right?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe he's just called the Cornflakes Rooster.
Yeah, Cornflake Bird.
Happy morning, Cornflake Rooster. Yeah. And they're
Cereal Bird.
Yeah, there just wasn't. And there were so many that it was kind of hard to winnow, like narrow in on a story. And
back when you could get a watch and your fries made in beef tallow.
Mm-hmm.
Simpler times.
This is the thing. I took a little bit of a look at this, and it's like basically every single cereal that had a promotional character like Captain Crunch or, Quisp and Quake, there was a character watch and probably more than one, like a lot more than one for every single one of these characters. It's amazing. I mean, it's a whole separate subcategory of character watches.
Can you imagine if there's a Toucan Sam and all the markers are circular, but they're different color Fruit Loops? I mean, I would buy that watch.
And his head?
His beak. And it separates. The mouth opens.
I'll find that for you.
I don't know that there's enough flavor variation in Fruit Loops to do 12 markers.
I think you'd have to vary it. You'd have to repeat.
Yeah, probably bounce back and forth. I think there's only so many. This is an interesting topic, though.
Oh, my goodness.
Sorry, everybody. The bird is named Cornelius Corny Rooster.
Oh, my goodness. That's even better than Cereal Bird.
Corny Rooster?
Okay. Just that's going to be the peak of the informational aspect of this show, is you now know the name of the cornflakes bird, Cornelius Corny Rooster.
Also, I'm now looking at multiple Toucan Sam character watches.
Does the beak open? And each side of the beak is telling the time.
His jaw unhinged like a snake was apparently not considered consistent with the charm of the character.
Just feathers. The hour hand should just be a bowl of milk, and the minute hand a spoon. It just kind of goes like that. But then the milk would spill. This is an engineering nightmare. Let's talk Grand Seiko. Let's get out of this character hellhole. And go to Grand Seiko.
What a segue, James. That was a beautiful segue.
You know what?
Yeah.
I'm a radio professional.
So here's a question to lead us into that subject. Are the ripples of water on the surface of Lake Sua a character?
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. For me, sure. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's been our show. Thanks so much for listening. the Grand Seiko dropped some stuff, and I don't want to spend the entire episode joking about character watches. I think a lot of that content's on the site, but it's also, we're right on the eve of Geneva Watch Day. There's going to be a lot of watch announcements the week that this episode comes out. Keep in mind, we recorded this a few days beforehand, so we're not up to that. Get to the next episode if you want to chat on new watches. We'll have a great episode for you next week on all of those topics. But we did get a recent drop of a handful of new Grand Seikos. Jack, do you want to give us the kind of 5,000 foot view on these new models?
Yeah, sure. They're all limited editions. Two of them are the SLGA 008 and 007, respectively, the Tree Ring and Waters of Lake Sua, spring drive Grand Seikos with a new 9R A2 spring drive movement. And they're both beautiful watches. One of the cool things about the 9R A2 is that it addressed a major pet peeve that some people had with not all, but some of Grand Seiko's spring drive watches, which is that the power reserve is on the front of the dial. And there were, people, I think, there's a legitimate case to be made that sometimes it works really well and sometimes it works less well compositionally. So they moved the power reserve to the back, which is where you find it on, say like the Creator HE, spring drives. Power reserve is on the back now, and you get a much cleaner dial. It's a thinner movement. So a lot of the thickness that historically people have associated with spring drive, they're not like ultra thin watches, right, but they certainly feel, look and feel noticeably thinner than their predecessors. And I thought that that was just a great way to show, for Grand Seiko to show that it actually does listen to customers and it does actually incorporate customer feedback. And they're fantastic looking watches. The other watches that Grand Seiko launched are three US only limited editions. They're all in different shades of green. And these are a relatively small hand-wound Grand Seiko watches, sort of 37.3 by 11.6 millimeters with a caliber, hand-wound caliber 9S64. And it's just like wonderful, classic, you know, watchmaking from Grand Seiko. These are like the kinds of watches that put Grand Seiko on the map. And for those who've, you know, kind of feared that Grand Seiko had abandoned offering a ton of quality for surprisingly little money as, you know, as part of their identity, these are all under $5,000 and they're just fantastic, fantastic watches.
These will age really well. They're beautiful.
Yeah. And I think they're going to go fast too. There's only 150 of each color.
Yeah, it's kind of three different shades of green. I would argue that one of them is much more blue than it is green, but it's three different shades of a sort of watery green. I think they're gorgeous.
Winter green gum, you know? It's like winter mint.
Yeah, fair enough, for sure.
Kind of.
And yeah, so these are all based on the SBGW 231, which is a fan favorite for the smaller kind of time-only vibe from GS. And like Jack said, under $5,000, actually limited. And the three colors are super distinct of each other, which is, you know, to do green, most brands would pick one color and do that green. And Seiko's or Grand Seiko's gone to the extent of doing three. And I think all three are great. You know, the only one that kind of stands out for me is on that lightest green color. It's almost like off mint. It has a blued seconds hand, which is very distinctive, but I feel like the steel second hand on the other two versions, which one is sort of a grayish green blue, and the other one's a more, I don't know, kind of desaturated sort of like middle tone green. I think the steel hands look better for me. But where do you guys land on that? What are the three kind of hits you the hardest?
I think that's an example of great attention to detail on the part of Grand Seiko for these pieces. You know, the steel, the polished steel seconds hand is very, very legible on the two darker dial watches, but I think it would wash out a little bit because, you know, it doesn't have the distinctive facets that the hour and minute hands have. So it would be considerably less visible against a lighter color dial. And I think the fact that they actually went with a heat blued seconds hand on the lightest color dial is, I think that shows that they're actually, you know, thinking about what they're doing. This is, they didn't just say, hey, let's make, you know, 150 each green dial limited editions, US market only, just push them out there and, you know, we'll make some money super fast, which they will, you know, but the fact that they actually took the trouble to make sure that the most legible possible version of a seconds hand they had was on the watch that needed it most. I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah. And they've got, you know, they have a track record of doing this a bit as well. In 2017, they did the SBGW, the kind of first Grand Seiko re-editions. And they changed up the hand coloring. It also kind of signified which case. I believe the steel case version of that had a blued steel, but I might have had that conflated with the platinum version or something like that. But they've done this before, and it certainly it's easy to read, which is a high point. Nora, where do you land on these? Do you like these?
Yes, I think they're beautiful. I think I was a little like, oh boy, green again.
We're seeing a lot of green these days, but like green, it's like we're rotten with Space Jam and green watches for sure.
Yeah. But these feel really different. I think that the lightest one with the blue seconds hand seems really special. Mm-hmm. And like Danny said, they're going to age really well. And there's something kind of, I think the blue seconds hand almost makes it kind of funky. Like it's very smart and intentional, but it like adds an element of something different to it that I think is just really, really
It's
lovely.
A unique touch.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. Danny, what do you think? Which one of these three would have you, you know, clamoring for your nearest Grand Seiko boutique?
So I keep covering each one with my hand to see which one I like better because when they're all together,
I thought you were just waving
in an array. They look wonderful, and no one can see this. I'm just waving my hand back and forth in front of the Zoom camera.
Yes, hi, Danny.
I like the what I call the wintergreen green. These are all gum to me. It's wintergreen, spearmint, and I don't know. There's a Orbit flavor called Sweet Mint, and that's what the far right,
the light one
looks like.
Sure.
I'm really into it because I like how the GS logo actually pops more off of that darker shade than it does on the other greens. And it's also less green. Mm-hmm. So because it can be blue or green, I like having options. So that's my favorite.
Very cool.
But overall, I mean, just besides just picking which dial color I like the best. I mean, these are to me, like quintessential Grand Seiko watches, as Jack pointed out. I mean, this is super clean design, high level of finishing, both dial and case. And it's just a lot of times when you're at this price point, people are going to say, oh, I could just buy a Tudor or, you know, whatever the case may be. And there's a, I don't feel that here. I think Grand Seiko, oftentimes you don't actually have that thought cross your mind when they do it this well. And I see a ton of people who are going to want to pick these up.
And no date window.
And no date window. True.
No date window. Yeah, no, those are great. Be sure to check those out. And you know, everything we're chatting about where there is a link available, we'll have it in the show notes. So you can always click there to see deeper into that. Look, I've had you guys for the better part of an hour. Anything you feel that we missed? Anything you'd like to bring up to close out the show?
We could all sing the Space Jam theme song.
Oh, God, please. No more Space Jam.
I don't think we have the copyright for that. Nora, that's the kind of idea I put out there, and then you tell me we don't have the copyright. We don't need to reverse that just because it's my show.
Is it an original composition composed especially for Space Jam?
It's what my brain sounds like 24 mm-hmm. hours a day at
just,
this point.
It's just the sound of all of the Space Jam watches running ASMR style next to a very sensitive microphone, and it's the sound of madness.
It's that clip of James going,
okay, so that's our show. All right, I think that's as good as any place to leave it. Nora, Danny, and Jack, thank you so much for coming on kind of this first experimental H Radio show. Thanks to everyone who listened. If you have any comments, leave them in the comments section below the show notes. And we will chat to you next week with the latest and greatest from Hodinkee.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you,
James. Thanks, James. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks so much for listening.